Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
It is 12:07. You are listening to the Shaletta Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. I am coming to you live from the Lyon County Sheriff's Office in Marshall, Minnesota. Why am I here? Because over the summer, a four-year-old boy with autism wandered away and drowned. And so I reached out to the sheriff, asked him if we could partner together to do a door lock giveaway. I went online and bought about 50 locks. My friend Cindy Linus bought about 20 locks, and I dumped them in the 9-seater. And I got up at 4 o'clock this morning and took a ride out here so that starting at 10 o'clock, we could give away these locks in Marshall, Minnesota, these interior combination door locks, the ones I use to keep my children safe from wandering outside the home, to families in this community who have autistic children who elope. And I was so blessed because I had invited the mother of the boy who wandered away and drowned to come. Because I'm doing this in honor of her son. And in other cities where I've done this, and this is my fifth time, the parents have declined to come. And today she came and gave me a hug. And someone told me that was the first time she has smiled since her child died. And so I'll be here for the duration of the show. The lock giveaway this morning was amazing. We'll talk more about that later. Josh Wheeler is in the studio making sure all of our guests come through on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. And Al Schock is in the newsroom giving us the latest on news and information. And I got some information that I have to share with you because it is something that you need to know. It is something that shocked me that I said, oh, my God, I got to get somebody on the radio to talk about this first thing. So I was at Flavor Cafe having lunch with Selena Koster. She is the assistant director of communications for the Senate DFL. And she said, did you know about the Debt Fairness Act? And I said, girl, I don't know what you're talking about. What is that? And she said, it's all about how, medical debt is handled in the state of Minnesota with regard to credit bureaus. And I had just read a story where, a man lost so much and couldn't get this, that, or the other because he had a $6,000 credit debt after his wife died of cancer. And it was just the most heartbreaking thing that I've ever seen. And she said, well, you know what? We have something in Minnesota. You need to talk about it on your radio show. I was like, well, who can I talk about it? Who's in charge of it? She was like, Senator Liz Bolden. I said, you mean my girl Liz, the assistant majority leader? Because let me tell you about Liz Bolden. Okay. When we had Black Entrepreneurs Day at the Capitol, we had a van of business owners from Rochester to come to the Twin Cities for the event back in February. And I called Liz and I said, listen, you got a lot of people coming from Rochester. Will you meet with them and talk to them about some of their concerns as Black-owned businesses? And she was like, oh, sure, no problem. And, I'm telling y'all, everybody talked to me about meeting with their representative or their senator or the lieutenant governor. And over and over again, the business owners from Rochester could not heap more praise on Senator Bolden about how she listened, about how she gave them her undivided attention, how they didn't feel rushed. And Senator Bolden, I don't know if I ever circle back to thank you. Please accept my apologies, but I just appreciate you so much being a part of Black Entrepreneurs Day at the Capitol.
Well, thank you so much. No need for an apology. I enjoyed that so much. We had fantastic conversations on that day, and, those conversations have continued. And so it was a great experience, and I look forward to doing that again next year.
And that's the thing that everybody was telling me is that they didn't. I got to tell my volunteers. Bye, y'all. Thank you, ladies, so much. The ladies from Head Start came and volunteered today at the lock giveaway. And I didn't have to do anything except show up and start hugging and kissing on families because they took care of me. So I had to say bye to the ladies. They're all leaving and cleaning up. But, you know, that's the thing, Senator Liz, is that, you know, they came to the event, but y'all have continued the discussion, continued the dialogue, continued the engagement. How important is that with regard to the overall, you know, success of these people's businesses?
Oh, it's incredibly important. And, you know, I want to do my part to build that relationship and to see, you know, what I can do to be sure that they can thrive and be successful in our community. Our community needs them and we are better off for it. And so it really is a partnership. And, you know, I'm excited for that to continue.
Now, we have to talk about this Debt Fairness Act. I'm going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to jump right into this, Senator Liz, because there are so many people out there who have hospital debt and they are afraid to death that this is going to go on their credit. You have done something to take care of that here in the state of Minnesota. We're going to tell you what that is when we come back. I am talking to State Senator Liz Bolden right here on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. It is 1216. It is WCCO Radio. It is the Shaletta Show. And it is time for us to learn about the Minnesota Debt Fairness Act. Now, Senator Liz, what is this all about?
So I am thrilled to chat with you about this. This is some of the work I am most proud of this past session because of the impact it will have for people. So it's a package bill. It does a number of things. And I want to note that I worked on it in partnership with the Attorney General's office. So shout out to Keith Ellison and his team, who are amazing, as well as my partner, Liz Ryer, in the House. So it does a number of things. The first thing I'll say is it does not allow healthcare entities to deny care for people simply because they owe them a debt. Which some people say, gosh, I can't believe that was a thing. It absolutely was. And so, you know, we heard heartbreaking stories from people across the state who were denied care because they owed a debt. And so that won't happen anymore. It bans the practice of automatic transfer of medical debt from one spouse to another. So Minnesota was one of the very few states who did this. And medical debt was one of the only debt we treated that way, that you were automatically responsible for your spouse's medical debt. That is no longer. It does not allow medical debt to be reported to credit bureaus. So medical debt will not affect your credit score, which is important because we know that medical debt is not a indicator of creditworthiness. You know, any one of us could be a diagnosis or an accident or an illness away from having a boatload of medical debt by no choice of our own. And so those are three things that it does. It does a number of other things, but, you know, medical debt is such a huge issue for so many people. You know, if people aren't personally affected by medical debt, I guarantee they know somebody who is. It has such a profound impact on people's lives. And I see this, my work outside the legislature is in healthcare. I work as a registered nurse. And so often the patients that I take care of, instead of being focused on healing and getting well, they are scared and worried and stressed because of the debt that they know they are incurring in the hospital at that very moment. And so it just shouldn't be that way. And you know, until we move to a healthcare system that is really focused on care instead of profits, which I'm also deeply committed to working on, you know, this work is important as well to give people a little bit of breathing room.
And let me just say, you know, you were talking about the stories that you hear from people who, you know, are concerned because they owe the hospital a debt and so they don't go in. That's just the ones you're hearing. There are people making decisions mm-hmm. every day saying, you know what, I'm going to put off that breast exam. I'm going to put off that, you know, ultrasound because I've got fibroid tumors. I'm going to put off that colonoscopy because I have a debt and I need to pay that down because I don't want the hassle of going in there and not being able to pay and being embarrassed at the front desk or being denied treatment or, you know, just hoping they don't pull up, you know, my financial record before we go in there to take this test that may even save my life.
100%. And I hear that for patients as well. And you're right. That's exactly right. I have heard many, many stories from people. And if people know that I've been working on this, they are, you know, kind enough to share their stories with me. But you're exactly right. There are so many stories that we don't hear about of people who are delaying care or foregoing care completely. And it shouldn't be that way. It doesn't have to be that way.
And, you know, talk to me about the spousal transfer of debt. I remember when my mother-in-law died, my father-in-law was going through all the paperwork and he had to pay those bills. And I remember when Sean and I got married, you know, we took out additional life insurance policies with an added payout just in case there was some medical debt. So, you know, this is having a ripple effect. You know, it's not just that, you know, thank God we're not going to have that debt transfer, but now you don't have to get the extra insurance. You don't have to worry about, you know, taking on the debt of a dead spouse. You already grieving. You don't want to grieve and be broke.
100%. And this, you know, affects people at such a, often in such a difficult time in their life where they are already going through that grief and difficulties, and then, you know, to have this heaped on top of them, to, in addition to learn that now they are responsible for this medical debt, is just, it shouldn't be that way. And so, yeah, again, you know, Minnesota, we were one of the only states who were doing this, and medical debt was the only debt that was treated that way. And so it won't be anymore. You know, we heard stories of, just as you mentioned, sometimes couples who would get divorced solely because they didn't want that transfer to happen, or spouses who would have to go into bankruptcy because they had no other option. They just could not pay the debt that they had incurred that wasn't theirs, but from their spouse, that they ended up in poverty and bankruptcy. And so, it doesn't have to be that way. It shouldn't be that way. And as of October 1st, it won't be that way in Minnesota.
You know, I have to ask you, I remember when, you know, all the legislation was passed. Minnesota, you all work like day and night on both sides of the aisle, getting the free lunch legislation and so many other things passed so that Minnesota families could live, you know, better lives. Our children would be better taken care of. And Minnesota really became a model for the rest of the country about how politicians, regardless of whether you are Democrat or Republican or Green Party or Purple Party or the Marijuana Party or all points in between, can come together for the good of the people. Do you think this Debt Fairness Act is going to be something that other parts of the country look at Minnesota and say, you know what, we can model that?
I certainly hope so. And I will say, I have had conversations with folks, both, you know, legislators and advocates across the country who are interested in it and intrigued by it and are you know, potentially looking at working to do similar things across the country. Because, I mean, you're exactly right. This is not just a Minnesota problem. Medical debt is the number one cause of bankruptcy for Americans. And so it is absolutely an issue across the country. And there are things that we can do about it. I'll say, you know, just to mention a couple of other things that are included is for patients who have an error on their bill. It doesn't allow that debt to go into collections until the error is figured out. So it's just like some common sense things that you think, gosh, of course I shouldn't have to pay.
Okay, I was about to say,
you know, care that I didn't get.
This it seems to me like this shouldn't even have to be legislated. You know, we shouldn't have to. Y'all ought to be working on some other stuff right now. Like you said, this is common sense practice, and, you know, just to be fair with the people who are already sick, already hurting, already going through a diagnosis of some kind. You know, I don't know how many times I've been laying up in an emergency room with my children and somebody comes in, you know, and says, oh, you know, hey, you know, this kid has, did you want to pay that now? I'm like, my child can't even breathe on his own, man. Why are you being so insensitive and bothering me? But, you know, this legislation is really going to empower us. And I'm just thinking of all the parents like me who have special needs kids, have multiple health challenges that we have to try and overcome. And this, I just really wanted to get to you first thing today, because I have so many special needs parents like Charlotte and her daughter, who, you know, we've got a lot to overcome, and to get this information and to be empowered by it, it's really going to be a game changer.
I think so. You know, I too have a child with special needs, and I know, mm-hmm. you know, navigating that system is some, you know, feels like a full-time job sometimes. And so, you know, to have to inject some common sense and some fairness into that system really is going to change people's lives.
Okay. Now, what else you got going on? Because you've always got something up, always working on something. What is next? What's happening with you? I need to get the scoop on Senator Liz. You've got new legislation coming up. How's the family doing? I just want to get personal right now. What's going on?
Yeah, family is good. You know, interim has been good, working, you know, to get bills in order for next session, knocking lots of doors, you know, looking up as the upcoming election, you know, comes up here. And I am really excited to say that I am back in partnership with the AG's office and with Liz Ryer. We are going to continue the work on medical debt. We've got, you know, big things planned for next session. I can't give details away yet, but we are in active conversations and we have more work to do there.
And so what are some of the goals that you have for this upcoming session? You know, we are kind of in flux until, you know, this election happens. But I know, you know, session is going to be starting and, you know, the planning doesn't start when the session starts. You all are working around the clock, listening to constituents, looking at what is happening in the community and trying to figure out how we can legislate our way out of problems. You know, is there something that's bubbling up to the forefront that is going to be top of mind for you this session?
For sure. You know, over the interim, I've had many conversations with folks in my district and Minnesotans across the state. And next session will be a budget year. And so we will be studying mm-hmm. the budget for the state for the next 2 years. And, you know, in my view, a budget is a moral document. We spend money on what is important to us. And so it is important to me and my colleagues that we, you know, put together a budget that really reflects our values. And so I'm thinking about, you know, making sure that all kids in Minnesota can have access to a world-class education and everyone in Minnesota can get the quality health care that they deserve. And that we are, you know, building communities that are just and inclusive and safe for everyone. And so there's a lot of work that goes into that. But really, in listening to Minnesotans, it, you know, it's our job to meet people's needs and meet them where they are. And, you know, I think about, you know, there's rising costs and making sure that we are, you know, we've been talking about medical debt and that is one piece of the puzzle, but making sure that people can afford their lives, making sure that we are, you know, doing what we can to bring down healthcare costs and education costs and, you know, making sure that people have what they need to be safe and healthy and thrive. And so really that is my focus and what I'm thinking about. And it really is based on the conversations that I'm having with community members who are, you know, telling us what they need.
Well, I want to let you know, I appreciate you. I thank you for being on the show. It is always a pleasure to chat with you. And I want to make sure you go and get by Jersey Joe's when you get a chance in Rochester. Black owned business that was at Black Entrepreneurs Day at the Capitol fell in love with you in the way that you just took your time. You were kind to them. You were a great listener and a great advocate for these business owners. And he is a devoted listener on this show. 187 16th Avenue Southwest in Rochester, Jersey Joe's. You will think you are in Philadelphia if you get one of his Philly cheesesteak sandwiches. Girl, my mouth is watering just thinking about it.
I love Jersey Joe's and I am thrilled to chat with you today. Thank you so much for covering this topic and for inviting me.
All right. Now, look, when the session starts back up and you can reveal this thing that you're working on, come back by here so we can talk about it.
I would love to. Yes.
Okay. Sure. All right. It's a date. Thank you so much, Senator Liz, joining us courtesy of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Don't go anywhere. More of the Shaletta Show coming up. When I host events, whether it is that I'm doing a keynote speech or I'm moderating a panel or I'm emceeing, I don't just show up on the day of the event and read from the teleprompter. I want to be in on this thing. I want to stand on business and I want to go 10 toes in. I'm meeting with your team months before the event. We're going over the program. I'm going to bring light and love and laughter and a lot of heart to the work that you're doing. And I don't take it lightly when people trust me to host their events because you have an idea of how you want this thing to go. and then you hand that over to me. And there's no way for me to do it justice if I'm just going to show up on the day of the event. I want to meet with your team. I want to do a Zoom. I'm going to come by and take a tour of your facility. I'm going to talk to your employees. We're going to have a relationship. That's how I roll. And the thing for me is that relationship doesn't end when the event is over. Because I'm going to make a donation. We still going to be talking. We're going to be hanging out. If you got some other stuff going on and you need to shine a spotlight on that, I've got this platform. We're going to use it for that. And that is what we are doing today. Because I'm talking to Jen Polzin about Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Jen is joining us courtesy of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Miss Jen, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. It's always a delight to be with you, Shaletta.
Now, I was talking to your team, girl. I'm shame and sorry because when I hosted your event, right, I make it a habit of making sure that I, give 10% back to the organization that, hires me to do events when you have a fund to need. And so you hired me and I made the pledge when Glenn Flatterbow was there. And this was at the Tubman fundraiser and gala. Yeah. And you're the chief executive officer there. And then, girl, wait. Then we went out to lunch after. We just hanging out, laughing and talking. Yeah. I had to check with me to honor my pledge. Girl, we had so much fun. I forgot about that. Damn chick. And so what are you doing? Girl, wait, one of the people from your team came and they were like, Shaletta, do you plan on? I said, girl, I'm sorry. Ooh, girl, my bad. And I had to send my check in, girl. So I had to apologize. But in talking, I was like, so what y'all got going on? And she said, oh, well, we're real busy this month. I was like, oh, what's this month? She said, it's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Girl, I had no idea. And so I said, well, I got to get Jen on my show so we can talk about it.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, Domestic Violence Awareness Month, we think of it as Hopetober often at Tubman, as that opportunity to really show people the need, but also that there is safety and there is hope and that there is healing available. We also think about October as Domestic Violence Action Month. So we're delighted to be with you because we know you are all about action.
I am, and I'm all about making sure that families are safe. I want you to back up a little bit and talk to me about some of the work that Tubman does. I have some new Minnesota transplants, folks who just moved here to the Twin Cities, working at United Healthcare and General Mills and Target. I meet them at church. I tell them to listen to the show. And so oftentimes I forget that some people don't know about our institutional organizations that have been in this community a long time. And so as they make decisions about where they want to donate their time and their resources, I want to make sure that they get a good amount of information about Tubman and the work that you do.
Well, thank you. So at Tubman, again, everything we do is all about safety, hope, and healing. And we serve every year on average 18,000 people right here in the Twin Cities Metro who have experienced relationship violence. Sex trafficking and exploitation, homelessness, mental health and chemical health crises. And it's youth and it's adults, it's men and women, it's families. And we do that through a variety of services, everything from emergency domestic violence shelter to long-term housing in the community, all kinds of legal services, whether that be an order for protection or attorney representation, outpatient mental and chemical health services, and then a whole bunch of youth services. That's everything from violence prevention in the schools to mobile case management, working with the juvenile justice system to make sure that youth have all of the things that they need, to a drop-in center at Maplewood Mall for youth, and then all the wraparound things, everything from safety planning to support groups to economic advancement and financial information and education, all the things that really help people move from simply surviving to thriving. And every person's journey is different as they move from fear to freedom.
And so talk to me about your role as a chief executive officer there.
So I get the best job ever. And in all transparency, I've said that about every single job I've had at Tubman over the past 30 plus years. But I get to partner with folks in our community to help raise awareness and make sure that we are a place where people can come to get resources and people can live their best lives, to make sure that our staff can do their best work, to make sure that people in the community know that we are a resource, either for anyone who's listening right now who needs help, and the fact that we all know someone who is experiencing domestic violence. One in three women and one in five men will experience intimate partner relationship violence or sexual abuse at some point in their lives. Mm-hmm. And there are tons of ways that people can get involved. It's everything from partnering with people like you to help get the word out, to ways that people can give their time and their resources. Uh-huh. Maybe it's their expertise, or make financial contributions or items that we need, and really just be an ambassador for our mission.
And I tell you, you do such a good job at getting the word out. And one of the things that I appreciated at the gala that you allowed me to host is that you are not shy about sharing your story. You know, we always watch the Hair Club commercials and he says, I'm not just a president, but I'm also a client. And we used to chuckle at that, but that lended authenticity to the message. And you have such an authentic message. And I'm hopeful today that you will share some of that with us.
Sure. So, as I said that evening, right, I don't often share my personal story because it's just important to me to think about the fact that it's not about me, right? I get the microphone, I have the title, but it's really about the people we serve. And then I really look at the other side of it and say, but it is about me, and it's about you, and it's about everyone who's listening today in our community. So, you know, I shared with you that night that after my ex shoved me, I married him anyway, right? And I loved him so much. And over time, as his behavior became more and more unpredictable, I realized that while I couldn't save him, he wasn't ready to get help for his mental health and some of the things that he was experiencing, it was up to me to reach out and save myself. And so one day on my lunch hour, I went to my place and I threw all my stuff in a bag. I was fortunate enough to have a friend who could meet me there. And I will share with you that none of us are exempt. Because when I went home on my lunch hour, I did that, and then I went back to Tubman to finish my shift at the shelter. This was many, many years ago. So I was already working at Tubman, and I knew all about safety planning, right? And it was simply because of the strength of the survivors that I saw all around me, and what they were doing and what they had experienced, that I was able to be in a position where I knew that I had to leave before it became the type of physical and psychological violence that I saw every single day. And so I had that fresh start, and I had those resources quite frankly, because of Tubman and because mm-hmm. of all of the survivors that I got to see making these transformational big changes in their lives. And quite frankly, they gave me the strength to do the same. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the reason I wanted you to share that story was because every survivor that I talked to that night at the gala talked about how you gave them strength, how your story inspired them, how your story resonated with them. And, you know, everybody has a story. You were just brave mm-hmm. enough and bold enough to tell yours. Now, we got to take a quick commercial break, but Jen, I'm hoping that you stick around because when we come back, I want you to talk to me about that safety plan. Folks think, you know, especially people who have never been involved in this, you know, domestic violence, that they could just go. You could just leave. You got your pet. You got your house. You got your children. You've got clothes. You know, your elderly relative might be living with you. And so you got to do something, right? And so talk to me about the safety plan. Also, I want you to talk to me about people are still coming. Hey, how y'all doing? Thank you for picking up a lock. I'm in Marshall, Minnesota, giving away interior combination door locks to families who have children on the autism spectrum who wander. And so folks are still picking up locks and they're waving. And I don't want to be rude and not wave because I'm doing the show live from the Lyon County Sheriff's Office. But I want to talk, Jen, about that safety plan, the importance of that, as well as some of the things that Tubman has coming up this month to honor and commemorate Domestic Violence Awareness Month. More with my friend Jen when we come back. It is 12:50. You are listening to the Shaletta Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. My name is Shaletta Brundage, and I'm the host of the show. Josh Wheeler is in the studio, making sure all of our guests are getting through on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. And Al Schock is in the newsroom bringing us the latest on news, weather, and traffic. And, you know, there's a lot of traffic going through Tubman this month because it is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We want to make folks aware about these safety plans. And, Jen, I didn't know you needed a plan. I thought you just planned to get up and leave, but it is not that simple, is it?
It is not. One thing that we know from decades of experience and research all across the country is that when someone is leaving an abusive relationship, it can actually be the most dangerous time. Now, I want to be really clear to all your listeners that there is still hope, right? And I don't want someone to be discouraged by that fact, but instead, reach out to Tubman. You can call our 24/7 line at 612-825-0000, and someone can help you make a safety plan. And a safety plan isn't, you know, it's not, it doesn't have to be this complicated, overwhelming thing. And safety plans are also not one and done. They evolve over time as our situations change. But it can be as simple as what are some important documents that you need to bring with you. It can be things like how can you still be found through technology. For example, the tracking on your cell phone if you share, yes. You know, a cell account or a phone account. It can be things like thinking through if an order for protection is a good option for you, if you need to go to a shelter or if there is a different place that can be safe for you, if you are sharing parenting time with your children, how can you make those exchanges less traumatic for your children, but also how can you do that in a place and space perhaps with people that are comfortable helping you in that role. It can be things like even choosing your time. There can be safety plans that are even happening, you know, when you are still with your partner before mm-hmm. you decide to leave. Things you can do in the middle of an argument if you feel like things are escalating. You know, how can you try to move into a space, for example, where there is a way out? There are all kinds of aspects to a safety plan. Sometimes it's as simple as having a code word that you can use with your whole family, mm-hmm. All of those things. And safety planning also extends to the people around us and the people that are, you know, our loved ones who are concerned about us and want to help. I want to share that last year, right here in Minnesota, there were 40 confirmed deaths due to domestic violence in 2023. And that is the highest number documented since 1989. And of those 40 deaths, 26 women and 3 men were killed by a current or former intimate partner. And 11 bystanders lost their lives during a domestic violence incident. Mm. That left 80 children, 47 of them were minors, right here in Minnesota, who lost mm-hmm. a parent this past year due to domestic violence. So those numbers were doubled from the previous year. And I want to also be clear that a safety plan can reduce your risk and can help keep us safer. And sometimes, you know, we make all the best possible choices and something can still happen, right? And mm-hmm. sometimes we might not think about it at all, and thank goodness everything turns out okay. But a safety plan is something that when you talk to a professional, they can help you think through different scenarios, so that when you're in the middle of that stressful situation, mm-hmm. You can help, you can act more clearly in the middle of all of the chaos and reduce the risk for being harmed even further. So everyone is tailored specifically yeah. to a person or a family's unique situation.
And, you know, there are people listening who are DMing me who say, I want to help. I want to volunteer. I know you are always looking for bodies, and it takes money as well to do this work. Talk to me about how people can donate their time and their resources to Tubman, especially this month.
Thank you so much. We use volunteers for every single aspect of our work, whether it is providing direct service, in any one of our capacities and programs, if it is volunteering in your professional skills. For example, we rely on our pro bono attorney team to help guide people through the court process. It can be things like a one-time volunteer opportunity where a group of friends or coworkers can come together and do a project on a particular day. It can be answering our resource line and helping guide people through providing that emotional support, sharing resources in a confidential way. We can provide all of the training and screening, and we do all of the background checks and all of those kinds of things. So we try and make it as simple as possible. And people can learn all about those various opportunities at tubman.org. And there is a whole section there about internship and volunteer opportunities, including group volunteer opportunities. And we use people and their gifts through the entire year. So this is a great time to think of it here during October, Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And we can use your help and your talents to fuel our work throughout the year. And then if people have financial resources that they can contribute, that absolutely powers our work. And you can learn more about what we need, again, at tubman.org, or you can call us anytime. We can you know, gifts from $5 to $5 million, right? All of it makes a difference.
Well, you are making a difference, and we appreciate you for being on this show. Jen Polzine, courtesy of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Don't go anywhere. We've got more of the Shaletta Show coming up next.